Hello, I'm Megan Bell, the Director of Engagement at Daylight and your host. Welcome to Illuminate Philanthropy, a podcast dedicated to illuminating the world of philanthropic advisory, enhancing the profession, and amplifying its impact. We have just wrapped up our inaugural series of Illuminate Philanthropy, which focused on adapting to the 8 key trends in philanthropic advising. These trends included shifts in client demographics, evolving definitions, various giving vehicles, challenging established norms, growing mistrust, wealth planning, utilizing AI for good, and navigating a complex marketplace. In this exciting new series of Illuminate Philanthropy, we're bringing you face-to-face with the thought leaders and changemakers shaping the future of philanthropy. Join us as we connect with members of Daylight's faculty, learners, and advisory board. Seasoned practitioners who are driving real transformative change in the sector. Each episode offers a unique firsthand perspective filled with innovative ideas, practical insights, and inspiring stories that highlight the power of philanthropy to create lasting social good. Our guests just don't talk about theory. They share their lived experiences, offering behind-the-scenes looks at how they're working with communities, organizations, and clients to push the boundaries of what philanthropy can achieve. From the art of storytelling to the power of collaborative funding and the need for greater diversity with advisory roles, we're spotlighting the individuals who are redefining what it means to make a meaningful impact. Tune in to hear the powerful efforts and bold initiatives that are shaping the future of social change.
I'm a Black male in this work, and I just know that when I first, I'm not afraid of it, it's just what it is, right? And I knew what I signed up for. Just knowing that my first meeting with a non-person of color is basically a vetting session. Mm. They are trying to, who am I? How long have I been with the organization? What have I done? How did I get here? Who do I know? And again, that's just part of it, being a Black male in this. And so for me, it's establishing, trying to get them to understand that my goal here is to understand why you're supporting, you know, a cause. What are you looking for out of this potential of philanthropic partnership? And can I be a catalyst to that?
I'm delighted to welcome our guest today, Christopher Beck. Christopher is a Daylight IPA learner and member of Daylight's advisory board. With over 20 years of experience in planning and executing various philanthropic initiatives, Christopher excels in creating and nurturing corporate and community partnerships. He also trains and coaches fundraising professionals while successfully securing donor contributions ranging from $10,000 to $1 million to support nonprofit research and charitable organizations. Welcome, Chris. Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. I know that you and I have been waiting to connect, so I'm so glad that we could finally find the time in our schedules. But hey, where are you hailing from? Where are you based right now?
Today, the great city and state of Atlanta, Georgia, cold Atlanta, Georgia.
Cold Atlanta, Georgia. And is Atlanta, Georgia where you're from?
No, actually, I'm a native Mississippian. I was born in Mississippi, yep.
Yeah, okay.
And we've moved around a little bit, so, and this is where I'm at now.
Well, I want to start off by just asking you, as I ask all our guests, tell us about your philanthropic journey. How did you find yourself in philanthropy? I had someone share with me, a dear friend, tell me that philanthropy is biography. And I truly believe that we find ourselves doing this work because there's something personal about it. There's an experience about it. There's some origins about it. So I would just love, tell me your story. How did you get into philanthropy?
Yeah. So thank you for asking. So I am, by my degree, I'm a teacher.
Oh, okay.
But I quickly realized, shout out to all the teachers, much love. I felt when I got really? Into it, it was, I felt like it was more. Something else was calling me, right? So first love is, you know, outside of teaching, I dabbled into the fitness space for a while. That's another story, but got involved in teaching, saw a lot of stuff. I think I taught in an underserved community at the time, and I think that was the first time I was kind of sheltered as a child a little bit. I say that respectfully. But I think it was the first time that I saw poverty. Where I taught. And I was like, man, this is pretty unique. You know, I was blown away. The area that I taught in, we had to, the kids did not come to school until after Labor Day. But the teachers, we had to go and door knock to get the kids to come. And the thing that got me the most is went to one house, knocked on the door, and it was one of my students. He said, Mr. Chris. And I was like, oh, hey. And as I walked to the door, he was not about 9 years old at the time, but he was the oldest. It was him and his five siblings that were there, and he was the oldest. And I said, well, where's your mom? And he was like, well, she's not here today. And I said, when are you coming back to school? He said, well, I don't know. And that moment, I left that house. I was like, wow, man, this is pretty heavy. And so I just, it just hit me in a very different way. And I'm like, man, got to be something more than I can do when walking these streets trying to get these kids to come to school. So fast forward a little bit. I made a list for personal faith. So I made a list and I said, if I had my perfect job, I kind of listed out all the things on this job that it would be. And make a long story short, I got a call from the Boy Scouts of America.
Oh, my goodness.
And it literally, it was like the lady that called me, it's like she was reading from my list that I had written.
It's like divine intervention.
It was totally divine intervention. And so much so to where I thought my best friend and my wife knew what I wanted to do. And so I thought they were playing a joke on me. And I said, and my best friend, George, I said, George, stop playing. She was like, Mr. Beck, this is not George. This is, her name was Donovan. Like this, hey, this is Donovan with Boy Scouts. And we're going to talk to you about a job. And literally, it was like so divine intervention. And so long story short, I got an interview with somebody and to be real, you know, we're going to be real in this podcast here. I got turned down. The guy told me, he's like, hey man, I think you're a nice guy, but you can't do the job. You got a fitness background and you do teaching. I don't see the semblance. And so as I was leaving out, the CEO at the time stopped me and said, hey, if I set you up a ride day, shadowing day with somebody, would you do it? I said, absolutely. Set the shadowing day up. I go with the person who eventually became my boss, Harold Witherspoon. Shout out to Harold Witherspoon. Gave me my chance with the Boy Scouts of America. And it was the best thing. Harold taught me he taught me about relationship capital. I will never forget that word when he told me that. He was like, if you can understand relationship capital in this business, you will go far. Mm-hmm. And make a long story short, again, that's how I got here. That's how I started. So we were in Nashville at the time. My wife at the time got a chance to go back to school. That opportunity landed us in Memphis for her school. And so I was at a crossroads at that point. I was like, man, do I want to stay in this? Do I want to make a run for it? And again, I'm a big list person. So I made my list again, faith, and got a call from St. Jude, and here I am. So.
And I think that's why I so value you, because of that evolution there. You have so much perspective. You've done, I don't want to say ranks, but you've gone through the whole landscape of philanthropic giving and philanthropic advising and families and relationships and legacies. What's hard about your work?
Ooh, man, I'm a black male in this work. And I just know that when I first, I'm not afraid of it. It's just what it is, right? And I know what I signed up for. Just knowing that my first meeting with a non-person of color is basically a vetting session. Mm. They are trying to, who am I? How long have I been with the organization? What have I done? How did I get here? Who do I know? And again, I don't, that's just part of it, being a black male in this. And so for me, it's establishing, trying to get them to understand that my goal here is to understand why you're supporting, you know, a cause. What are you looking for out of this potential philanthropic partnership? And can I be a catalyst to that? Mm-hmm. Can I help you? Mm-hmm. Now, keep in mind, you know, respectfully, some of these donors, if they're of a certain age bracket, you hear what I'm saying? They grew up in a different era. Mm-hmm. So you got to have thick skin. And you can't take it personal. And it's just facts.
Yeah. So do you feel like you have to work harder to earn trust with that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, there have been, absolutely. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's a part of it. And again, that's why I don't, you know, I've had to talk to and share with some of my white brothers and sisters, you know, look, my timeline to getting a gift is a little bit different than yours.
Interesting.
You know, right? So I may see these donors once or twice a year. And probably I don't get a chance to talk about a gift sometimes about that fourth, fifth visit. Because the first one or two, they trying to just, who am I? Can they see themselves working with me? And that's, again, that's totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, that, and people don't think about this. If you're not in the skin, you don't really think about it, right? You know, you just kind of just, so as a leader, you know, you have to have those very, very, very candid conversations with, you know, with leaders about very real, look, this is what I'm up against. You know, not that I'm not trying, but it's going to, it just elongates the process a little bit more. Again, nobody's upset about it. It's just, you got, as long as you understand that, that's what it is.
That's your reality for
Yeah.
sure. One of the things I was really excited to talk to you about is your role in diversifying the field. I know one of the things that Deanne and particularly Daylight is seeking to do is just that. How do we diversify the field of philanthropy so that those that are advising look like those that are giving, but also that those that are of color are more involved in philanthropy? So I want to hear about your work that you do with the Men of Color with the African American Development Officers Network. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so shout out to Ken Miller. Ken Miller, during COVID, the height of COVID and the unrest, reached out to me. He reached out to myself, my friend Marcus Brewer, and Andre Forbes. And he was like, so Ken's our mentor and coach. And he was like, look, I want you guys to be this group called Men of Color and Development. I want you guys to go to Vegas, and I want you guys to speak about what it's like being a Black man in this field. I was like, whoa, we all were like, no, what? I said, and we all were like, Ken, do you think people are ready for that?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, look, he said, AFP is behind it. He said, you know, they're gonna support you guys. He said, now's the time, now's the time. And I tell you, Megan, we, Marcus and Andre and I, we talked and we were like, God, we're gonna do this. And so we did it in Vegas. As COVID started to slide back a little bit, and nobody left our session. We did. We didn't know what to expect, but nobody left our session. And but what we took from that was the room. It was a big room, and it wasn't packed, but it was enough, right? And you had all types of people in the room. And what we saw at the time, I won't forget this one lady. I won't say the college, but she came up to me, very prestigious college, and she said, Christopher, she said, I'm scared. I'll never forget it. She's a white lady. She said, I'm afraid. She said, I lead some Black staff. I'm getting flack from my leadership, but I know what my staff have in front of them. And she said, I don't know what to do. And that stuck with me.
Hmm.
And so I was like, man, Ken was so right. So I saw at that moment, like, this is needed, because everybody was trying to figure it out, right? You know, white brothers and sisters, they're trying to figure it out. They want to help, right? The ally. They really want to help, but they got jobs too. And then we totally understand that. But then as a person, a Black person in this, you like, person of color, you like, man, we know the playing field ain't even. You know what I'm saying? You know, we know what we're up against. You know, our solicitation timeline is going to be elongated just because of who we are. And so we said, you know what, we got to create this. Shout out to AFP, also AADO, Birgit Burden, founder AADO. They created this space for us to have these really candid conversations, right, about what it's like. And Birgit was first, if you know anything about her, she's the first female African-American fundraiser for Georgia Tech. She really created this network, and she'll tell you, she created the network to give her a safe place to talk.
I was, More of, yeah, I bet.
Yeah, and it has grown over 4,000 members now.
Oh, that's impressive. That's encouraging
And
and exciting.
oh my
Yeah.
goodness, oh my goodness. And then you take AFP with their efforts to really diversify the sector, and they're hitting it straight on head on. And then you bring in Deanne, who I cannot say enough about Deanne. I'm so grateful that our paths crossed. So she's
You and me
so
both.
thankful for her. So between them, that's my family that has kept me when I really felt like giving up in this space. They have kept me sane and kept me. I have a whole network of folks that I can go and talk with and bounce ideas off of, from solicitation strategies, engagement, like the gamut. I'm so fortunate. So,
What does an inclusivity look like for you?
man, again, not just about color, it's about just having every voice at the table,
You.
right?
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
just allow people to have a voice to where you feel like you can just be yourself. And I think for me, with ADO, Daylight, MOSIT, those groups allow you just to, and again, now in ADO, we have everybody. We have Latinos, we have it's everybody, right? And so, and when we all get together on these calls and we talk and we meet up in person, it's like a big old family reunion because we all are just bringing ourselves to the fold in this space, right? And it's my Hispanic brothers and sisters are doing some incredible work. Incredible work. My Asian brothers and sisters are doing some incredible work. You know what I mean? And so when we all come together, it shows how unified we can be. It shows we're bringing authenticity to the fold. And it's just being shown. Again, shout out to my friend Joy Webb, who talks about, Joy runs a giving circle about philanthropy. And that's one thing that Joy has helped me with also, just teaching our community what philanthropy really is, right?
So I think terminology is really important, and I know at Daylight we're really trying to put some terminology around it, so we're all operating from that same level of terminology, right?
Yep.
And maybe that's one way we can level that playing field too, is that we all understand the same terminology and are acting within that same information or definition.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you got to think about it. Being philanthropic, some of it starts with home ownership. Let's just start right there, right? And so people of color, Black people, we didn't get home ownership till like 30, 40 years after everybody else. So again, literally, when I say this somewhat wealth in quotes, this is really
That's
new
new.
for us.
Yeah.
And then we're so as a as a as a as a as a group, as a community of people, we're thinking about our family first, right? So our philanthropy, even how we give, to your
That's
point,
home.
it starts in our community. It starts back with our family. I want to make sure, okay, I went to college. I want to make sure my niece goes to college. You get what I'm saying? So that's why people will say, we might not call it philanthropy, but that's what, because we're going to take care of family first.
Talk to me about your role in legacy building, because I do know that that is one thing we've talked about in the past, and sort of your goal of making sure donors in particular feel like there is legacy there. Maybe if you want to share your own personal legacy or your desires for that, but
Yeah,
legacy.
so I, you know, with the supporters that I work with, a lot of them, some of them don't even think about it in that light, right? And so some of them just see it as, hey, I've been fortunate enough, so I want to give back how I can, right? But I try to make sure they understand that it's my job to make sure that you are remembered. Now, you can say, Christopher, you know what? I don't want to, and that's fine, but I have to put it out there, right? You got to make sure. And so it takes a little while to even break through to get them to even think about. So you mean just because I'm gonna leave this or write you this check, it's a legacy? Yeah. So even that, it's a whole educational component. And that's one of the things that I try to, I'm so grateful that I try to, I really do use the philanthropic curve piece. And so, again, that's a great conversation starter for me. Whether you're becoming a donor, getting organized, or kind of wherever you are, wherever you tell me you are, because I'll take my little chart thing and I'll show it to them, and they, what is this? And then, and then I said, well, just kind of pick out kind of where you are, and where do you think you are on this chart? And you could see like they never even thought about it, Megan. Like they were kind of like just I'm just helping out. But so I kind of start there to get them just to really go on, because then they help me kind of build a plan, you know, and then you take it and you have a dialogue around, you know, the whole thing. And then at some point you see the light bulb. Oh, this what this means. Right. And for me, that's like the best feeling ever. Right. Man, that's a good feeling.
Yeah. And the philanthropic curve you're referencing is actually from TPI, right?
Oh,
from
sorry.
The
yes. Yes.
No, films. I'm just in, for
yes,
those
yes,
who
yes,
don't know,
yes,
from the philanthropic
yes,
initiative,
yes.
and it's actually part of one of our modules that we do in IPA, Impact Philanthropy Advisor.
Yep.
And it's this idea of taking a donor up the curve, right?
Yep.
So that you can figure out what means most, where they're at, and then you can sort of engage. Because I know one of the things we're deeply committed to at Daylight is helping with those philanthropic conversations. And this is a tool that we recommend, and it sounds like you use regularly, to help supporters along the way. So I just wanted to reference that that's when we talk about the philanthropic curve is what we're talking about, right?
Big, major shout out to TPI. Thank y'all for what y'all do. I appreciate that.
I'm just curious. Personal example, what do you feel is the impact, and what is the legacy you want to leave?
You know, man, you know, I recently, over the last year, I realized that, you know, in some of the houses and people that I meet, I'm the first Black person that I've gone, right, to go and have this conversation. And I have just come to realize, Megan, that, you know, as much as I don't want to, when I step into that house, and you can tell the first time, you know what I'm saying, or when I have that meeting with that donor, you can tell if you're the first one. I know that I am opening the door for other people like me. I tried to push it out. You know, maybe I'm not. Yeah, I am, you know, because, you know, and as you get to know people, they tell you some, you know, as you know, they tell you some pretty serious stuff, right? You just write, and you're like, man, okay, that made an impact. And then you see them, you see their minds opening up very differently as you build relationships with them. Because sometimes you're the first person of color to come in or meet with them to talk with them about, you know, giving at this level or whatever the case may be, and you see the light go off. And when they invite you back without you saying, hey, I want to, when can I meet you again? When they say, the next time you're in the area, hey, just stop by. That's when you know you've done some good work, right? Even if it's on that fifth or sixth visit, right? Because they felt comfortable enough. And you know, again, knowing the work, you don't rush them because it's on their timetable, right? And then at that point, you know, you pretty much, you've built something strong. So that's meaningful to me.
That's that relationship capital that you mentioned at the start of this conversation. It's also that trust that you talked about that's so critical to the relationship.
Yep.
And it's also about, to your point, that it isn't going to be the, you know, on the first try, probably not likely that in your case as a man of color, it may take longer and take more. And unfortunately, how can I, as a non-person of color, support you and support the work of people of color?
Thank you. You know, just doing, you know, having these very candid, real discussions like this helps. You know, there's another group, shout out to my Rising Color, a professional group that's a part of a subset of AADO, but these are younger professionals of color that are in the group. They're doing some phenomenal work. That's that millennial, Gen Z folks. They're doing some phenomenal work, you know. Anytime you can help us and help promote that, help promote MOSIT, AADO, you know, anything, you know, we can continue the dialogue like this and come up with some other ways, but helping to spread and share kind of what's going on. Again, you know, we have other, you know, within our group, again, we is everybody, Hispanic, Latin, Asian, is everybody, right? So, and again, we all have different, very different perspectives. And so it'll be cool. The more we can get this out in front of people, let people know, look, this is what it's like, right? This is what it's like. Because I think people don't know. And again, we're not, no, nobody, I want to be clear, nobody's crying, right? Nobody's crying. You know, we're just saying, look, this is what it is. Right? I mean, this is what it is.
Yeah, I think that is a fair ask. And I know that we are doing a lot of partnerships with those groups that you mentioned. And Dan is clearly committed, as
Yes.
Daylight is to raising those voices and creating that awareness. And actually, one of the modules we have is, we reference it as cultural dexterity. And it's helping those that are having those conversations understand where folks are coming from, whether it be their race, whether it be their nationality, whether it be their upbringing, but having that awareness when you're engaging and really making no assumptions, truly. So that whole thing around culture dexterity is really critical for all of us as we engage in conversations, particularly around philanthropy. So I'm just so grateful to have this conversation, and thank you for feeling safe in this space to engage with me at this level. I'm just more in awe of your commitment to your work, 17 years commitment to the organization that you're at right now. There is no doubt that you are a teacher every day, even though you are not in that teaching field. You mentioned fitness. I think that you are great fitness in helping people in their fitness of giving and their fitness of sharing and of helping. So let's not discredit where we started from. It brought us to this moment, right? No, truly, truly.
No, appreciate that. So I do want to say this, as you made me think about something. I would say this, for those who are thinking about it, meaning trying to get involved and you don't know how to do it, I would just say find your space, right? However you want to dig in, just do it. Because everybody can't do the same thing, right? Some people are loud. Some people are want to go hold signs up, you know, whatever case may be. Just find your spot and play your role. If I had to say, if anybody's out there thinking about how do I find your spot and play your role, you know, I am playing my role by supporting most at ADO, you know, and being, you know, and then that's how I'm doing. I'm doing it through that lens, right? You know, meeting good people like you. But that's how I've decided to do my part. So just find your part, play it, and go from there.
I mean, and I think really what's core to what you do, and I believe this is true of me too, is relationship. And if you could have told me that you can actually make a profession out of building relationships, you know, nurturing relationships, being in relationship, I would have told you, no, that's not possible. But the value of relationship, it's a through line. It's just critical. And I just feel blessed that I can do that. And I, you know, I love what you said, find your spot and play your role. I'm finding my spot and showing up, right?
Come on, there you go. Come on.
Thing. So I might change your language. I might say, I'm going to steal your find your spot, but I'm going to say, and show up.
There you go. There you go. There you go. Love it. Love it.
Well, Chris, thank you for showing up for us today. It's truly been an awesome conversation and honor, like I said, to have you in the space and to be part of the Daylight Network. And thank you for all the work you do on the advisory council and for the work you're doing for all the men and women of color that are right behind you looking to do this work. So you inspire, and I appreciate you.
Oh, listen, thank you for making space. And, you know, I know we got some other stuff planned on down the line, so I can't wait.
Yep, more to come, more to come. So thank you all for joining. Please stay tuned for the next episode. In the meantime, to learn more about Daylight and our Certified Impact Philanthropy Advisor Program, along with our new certificate program, please go to daylightadvisors.com. And please remember to subscribe. See you next time.